This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. And you can reach us by email, talk@talklouisiana.org. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Vantage Health Plan. We start with Nora Ahmed. She is the legal director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Louisiana, based in New Orleans. She's been on the job there for about a year now, and she has been with us a few times before. And Nora is a person who is familiar with other parts of this country. She most recently was in New York City as a lawyer, and she has a master's in teaching from Fordham and a Bachelor of Arts from the University of Oregon's Robert Clark Honors College. And she was raised in Oregon as the child of immigrants, an Egyptian Muslim father, a South Asian Indian Hindu mother. So she knows about diversity in our country, and I'm sure knows some unfortunate things about discrimination in our great land. And over the year, Asian immigrants and children have set their sights on the great southern city of Atlanta. But as we found out, things have not been all that pleasant, independent of the tragedy a few days ago. Six people were killed in what is largely believed to be a hate crime. And we have since found out that Asian Americans are facing more discrimination than before. So, Nora, based on what you have observed personally and what you are seeing right now, how are we doing as far as discrimination against another ethnic group that is quite substantial?
I think we're not doing very well, Jim, but one thing I would say is that we're talking about it is allowing us to change the narrative, and I think that's important because Asians have faced discrimination for decades. We've put that into statutory language in the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act. We have worked hard to marginalize Asians in this country, and I think it's important that we talk about that, and it unfortunately takes outright violence of multiple people for us to start engaging in the conversation, but it's an important start.
And when we say Asian, we're not just talking about people from China and Japan and Thailand and places like that. We're also talking about people from countries like India, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And I think that when we talk about Asians, because it comprises so many different people with so many different cultures, it might not always be clear to the larger society who we're referring to. And I think part of the issue is that we lump all Asians together, which is helpful when it comes to creating awareness, but I also think it can create further marginalization because different groups within the Asian community face different types of experiences, but it's all one of marginalization.
Well, President Biden and Vice President Harris went to Atlanta 6 days ago, offering solace to Asian Americans and a reeling nation as they visited Atlanta just days after a white gunman killed eight people, most of them Asian American women. And their trip was planned before the shooting as part of a victory lap aimed at selling the benefits of pandemic relief. But the president and vice president spent much of their visit consoling a community whose growing voting power helped secure victory in Georgia and beyond for Democrats. And activists have noted a rise of racist attacks. Nearly 3,800 incidents have been reported by Stop AAPI Hate, a California-based reporting center for Asian Americans. So why, in your view, Nora Ahmed, is there an increase of this kind of assault on people because of their ethnicity and particularly of Asian people?
I think in part it's probably a continuum. I think when we're talking about the increase, it's hard to disconnect that increase from the manner in which the former president discussed the COVID-19 pandemic and how that trickled through in society as an Asian problem, as something that stemmed from another continent, and it was a manner of deflection. So I think there's an issue of reporting among the Asian community, which is not necessarily as robust as we would need it to be to track patterns over decades. But I also think we can't disconnect that a very high official within this country effectively memorialized anti-Asian sentiment when he was talking about the COVID-19 pandemic that was taking so many lives.
You're talking about the former president of the United States.
Yes, I am.
Well, calling it the Chinese virus, do you think this intensified the kind of discrimination that we're discussing right now?
I absolutely think it intensified it, but I also think it goes to show just how normal anti-Asian sentiment is. And when we normalize that among the highest echelons of government, then we normalize hatred and violence. And it's less shocking, unfortunately, when you see people take that on and behave in the way that this individual gunman did. But I think not talking about how he also targeted Asian women is also part of the problem, because there's a large intersection between how we treat Asians and also how we treat Asian women. And that intersection between racism and sexism is something we need to explore. And I think when you look at the data that you're referencing on the Stop AAPI Hate website, we see that women are reporting at least 2.3 times more than men the racial incidents that they have experienced as a result of their Asian identity.
Your number is 877-217-5757 for Nora Ahmed, the legal director for the Louisiana ACLU, and talk at talklouisiana.org for emails. Sheila in Gonzales asks if your office has been getting more responses from Asian people who have faced discrimination in Louisiana and in New Orleans, where you're based.
I would say that to date, we have not necessarily seen a rise, but I don't rule out that we are going to start to see a rise of complaints in that area. But I think we also need to understand that civil rights protections are not as strong as they need to be for racial incidents. And the fact that we talk about hate crimes goes to show that we're relying on the criminal legal system when we in part need to start thinking about what do civil protections look like for the Asian community. And that's in part something that the legislature would need to take up locally and congressionally for us to really start getting involved, at least from a legal perspective, in bringing forth the complaints of these individuals.
Nora Ahmed of the ACLU is with us, and your number is 877-217-5757. John in Livingston, you were on Talk Louisiana with Nora. Hi, John.
Good morning, Jim. You had Walter Imahara on your show last year. The Imahara family is a perfect example of Asian immigrants who made tremendous contributions to America. And I'm sure you remember, Jim, that the Imahara family lost all of their possessions, all of their property and business when World War II came along. And they ended up in Baton Rouge and had a local plant nursery. Walter Imahara, as I recall, was a soldier in World War II, that their family never held any bitterness. So in my mind, we need to look at success stories of Asian Americans who were terribly mistreated that still made a joyful contribution to this country.
All right. Walter was a soldier later, but his family was interred in Arkansas at those camps that were set up to keep Asian Americans away from the general population, primarily Japanese Americans. Is that still a stain on our country? After all, that's only been, Nora, that's only been 75 years ago.
I think it is a stain on our country, and I agree that we need to focus on Asian excellence just as we need to focus on Black excellence. But I also think we need to acknowledge that speaking out about racism is not something that this country has largely embraced. And I think we're entering a new era since last year when people feel comfortable talking about it. But I agree, it's important to talk about the excellence, but we also have to talk about the challenges that people faced, and that we expect everyone to be able to overcome those challenges and still be successful. When that's not what we expect from society writ large, it's something we need to think deeply about, because we shouldn't allow ourselves to feel okay about the marginalization just because people are still able to be successful despite their mistreatment.
Well, last week, Asian American lawmakers warned the House Judiciary Committee that the nation has reached a crisis point amid a sharp increase in discrimination and violence targeting the Asian community. The first congressional hearing on the issue held in over three decades. It was scheduled weeks ago, coming on the heels of a mass shooting in which a white gunman killed eight people at three Atlanta-area massage parlors. Six of the victims were of Asian descent, and lawmakers described the fear and trauma rippling through the Asian American community, and they argued that the uptick in attacks on Asian Americans is a direct result of the rise of anti-China messaging stoked during the coronavirus pandemic. We're going to get more from Nora Ahmed, another segment with her, the legal director for the Louisiana ACLU. We'll go back to the phone lines in just a moment. A line is open, 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle's producing another segment with Nora Ahmed, legal director, Louisiana ACLU. And right now we're talking about discrimination against Asian Americans, something that has gained a lot of momentum as far as a discussion point since the massacre of six Asian women in Atlanta a few days ago. Dan downtown. Dan, you are on the air with Nora. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Is there some indication that white evangelicals harbor a very unchristlike prejudice, not only against Asians, but blacks, Hispanics, and Jews?
All right. Does the evangelical community have to stand up against this, and do they have to look themselves in the mirror? What do you think, Nora?
I think it's very important for everyone to do that. I don't think that the discrimination is faith-based. I think it's disconnected, but that it exists within a group that meets often is something that should be looked at, and I think that's a start for overcoming the prejudice. When you have a group of people that don't necessarily experience that prejudice, acknowledge that they harbor biases, and then actively work towards trying to curb that and welcoming those that they previously might have shunned.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you are on the air with Nora Ahmed. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. Just remember that it was FDR's administration that set up those camps for the Japanese Americans. And, you know, we called the Spanish flu the Spanish flu because they thought it originated from Spain. It turns out it actually also came from China. The reason why we called the Chinese flu or COVID was sometimes referred to as the Chinese flu is because it originated in China.
All right. Does a lot of things originate in the United States, too, and we don't generally refer to them as the American this, that, or the other. It's unfortunate that it started in China, but to put a blanket assessment of all Asian people based on the fact that this unfortunate, tragic pandemic began in China is beyond the pale. Now, Nora, Patrick speaks for a lot of people who are angry with China, and you stated earlier, as have many others, that the former president didn't do anything to tamp this down. In fact, if anything, he went out of his way to intensify discrimination against Chinese people. Can we get past that, or is that going to be with us for a while?
I think we can get past it, but I think we also need to ask ourselves what it means when we associate viruses or problems with a country that is not our own, because what results from that is this harboring of hatred towards people that come from that country. So I understand why people are saying, well, it's not a problem. We're just talking about where the virus initiated itself, or at least that's what we're aware of. But we have to be very careful with language, because language tells things to larger communities that we might not necessarily appreciate. And I think it is extremely important that if there is a virus, we can call it COVID-19. And if it's ravaging the world, we need to acknowledge that for what it is. If there are discussions about where it might have originated, that's not necessarily problematic. But it's when that narrative co-opts all other narratives that we start to see hatred, fear-mongering, and violence. And that is not something that we associate ourselves with as a nation. And so we do need to do better. And that next time, if there is such a virus, we need to not associate it with a landmass, but rather with what it is and the solutions we're going to use to actually overcome it. And I think this nation did an incredible job at identifying ways in which for us to get a rapid vaccine, and that is something to be celebrated. That it also had to come along with discrimination of a group of people is highly problematic, and we can do better.
877-217-5757. There is still time to talk with Nora Ahmed, legal director for the Louisiana ACLU. David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Nora. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Before I get to my question, a Chinese company working with BioNTech that worked with Pfizer developed the vaccine for the virus. If you watch 60 Minutes Sunday, a prosecutor from the U.S. Justice Department commented on the possible crimes committed by the hooligans who attacked the Capitol. Could that interview possibly jeopardize the possibility of the hooligans who attacked the Capitol to receive a fair trial?
You're saying a member of the Justice Department was interviewed?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the prosecutor.
All right. Well, usually prosecutors are cautious about those things, but saying something on 60 Minutes, could that impair the ability to prosecute others who were responsible for this? Nora, that's a good legal question. What do you think?
Well, the judge actually spoke about that issue in that case and expressed a lot of discontent that the prosecutor actually went on 60 Minutes and started making statements, because prosecutors are not allowed to use the media to try a case. They need to use that in a court of law. And he indicated that if there were going to be any further statements of that kind, that there would be significant issues and problems. And in fact, there is a current investigation going on about the statements that were made on 60 Minutes and the propriety of those statements. So while I am aspirational that that will not affect the prosecution of the case, I believe it's highly problematic for prosecutors to start trying their case in the public, even when you have individuals who want to know what's going on. We have a Justice Department. They need to uphold the rules that ascribe to them, and that means that the media cannot be part of trying their case.
Today's New York Times headline above the fold: Democrats begin push for biggest expansion of voting since 1960s. The headline below it: GOP aims to seize state ballot levers. We're having this battle in the United States right now over voting, and it is apparent that there is some effort to suppress some votes, particularly from African Americans. Does this smack of the old Jim Crow days? Nora, what do you think?
Well, I think one thing we're going to face in Congress is the issue of the filibuster, as everyone has indicated. If we want to see a change in voting rights, it is unlikely that there are going to be the 60 necessary Senate votes to make that happen. And so I think part of this is a question of how we want Congress to operate and function. But we also need to acknowledge that the maps in states such as Louisiana are problematic, and they are not allowing us to actually get a fair sense of what the people want and who they necessarily want to see in office. So we have a lot of work to do statewide, but we also have to ask ourselves as a nation whether we want more people voting at the polls. And unfortunately, there is a narrative among the Republican Party right now where there appears to be a desire not to have more people get access to the vote, because that doesn't necessarily help them in their elections. And as we all know, the popular vote did not go to the past two Republican presidents.
Henry at the Country Club. Henry, good morning. You're on with Amy, or with Nora Ahmed. Amy Britton's next, but Henry, you have the floor.
Well, hello, Miss Amy.
No,
got me doing
no,
it now,
Nora,
Mr. Jim.
Nora,
hello, Miss Nora, and hello, Mr. Jim. I hope y'all having a better day than old Henry's having. One of your previous callers got me a little bit rattled there. For the life of me, I've got friends whose ancestors came over from China, good of people as I know, good of friends of mine as I can imagine, didn't have a damn thing to do with this virus, yet because of narrow-minded people like him who are going to follow everything that Trump says, they're getting the blame for this.
All right. Is that a real factor? The former president obviously has a legion of supporters who accepted every word that he stated.
I think it is a significant problem, and it wasn't just his calling the virus the Chinese virus, but he also went so far as to call it the Kung Flu virus, effectively making fun of Kung Pao food that those of us may eat, and also associating that with the virus as though it was some kind of mockery or a joke. So I do think that's highly problematic, and we can't allow our elected officials to behave in that way if we really do believe that we should not be racist in our actions as a country. And I do honestly, in my heart of hearts, believe that is not who we are as a nation.
Nora Ahmed is legal director for the Louisiana ACLU. She is calling the great city of New Orleans home after being raised in Oregon and living for many years on the East Coast in New York City for some time. And we're glad you're now one of us, Nora, and we'll be calling on you again soon. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks so much, Jim. Really appreciate it.
See you soon. Nora Ahmed, legal director, Louisiana ACLU. When we return, Amy Britton, LSU graduate, Pulitzer winner of the Washington Post.